Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
And welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, can I ask you a question?
You may.
Do you know what time of year it is now? That's right, Matt. We are done with Halloween. That means it's Christmas. But I won't play the whole song. It's Christmas time, Matt. Merry Christmas. How are you?
Merry Christmas. I am good.
As listeners will know, I celebrate Halloween starting on August 13th, the day after my birthday, and November 1st, which is also known as All Saints Day, begins the 67 days of Christmas, which of course goes from November 1st to January 6th, the day that the wise men reached the manger to celebrate the birth of the Lord Jesus. Matt, I need it this year. We all need a little Christmas. I'm here. I hope you're ready for the next 6 weeks of Christmas content here on the show.
It's just going to be all jingles and bells here on the show. Is that what we call checks and wrecks when it's Christmas time?
I do not think we call them jingles and bells. I think we call them comforts and joys.
You're right. You are right, yes. Well, we're going to have those, and you're going to hear them. But first, Chris, before we do that, and before we do what we're going to do on the show, which is some panel president lists, because we need to catch up on those, let's thank our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. These are the people who have gone to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they are kicking in as little as a dollar every month to help us do the show, do some extra content, keep the lights on, and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
That's right. And the two names that we have to read out this week are Curtis Hisayasu.
Oh, thank you, Curtis.
I hope I got your name right, Curtis. And David Ellis.
Thank you, David. Ellis, tell them you don't know me, Ellis. It's Christmas time. Do you get it? It's Christmas time.
You'll go back and listen to our Die Hard commentary track, and you'll understand all of that.
People think this is a bit. It's not. I watched a Christmas movie at midnight on November 1st. I'm in this shit.
Well, if you would like to help us make it a Merry Christmas, you can go to patreon.com and kick in as little as $1 a month to help us, as Chris said, keep paying the bills, keep this show going, keep doing cool stuff for you, the listeners. If you do support us on Patreon, you get some stuff that nobody else gets, like bonus audio and ad-free episodes of the show, art that we commission sometimes. We need to commission some new art very soon.
Yeah.
And other physical rewards. You also help keep some of the stuff we do, like Snack Situation and Every Story Ever, going. So,
and Movie Fighters, and you're going to want to keep us doing Movie Fighters, because what we have planned is going to be one you want to hear.
And we got to catch up on some Movie Fighters. I think we owe people some Movie Fighters episodes after missing a month or two on that. So if you want to help make that stuff happen, please head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and help us out. All right, Chris, it is November, which means it's time to indulge in some comforts and joys. Chris, what is your comfort for this week?
Conventions coming up. I want to mention it here because if I don't, I will absolutely forget at the end of the show. But if you are in the North Carolina area, specifically, I guess, where's Durham, Matt? Is that central North Carolina? Because it's certainly not the mountains and it's certainly not the beach.
I would say it's in the Piedmont, in the central part of the state.
If you're in North Carolina, I suggest you make the drive, because I've got two cons coming up. NC Comic Con Bull City, which is actually this coming weekend, as you're listening to this, if you're listening to this on the day that goes up, I'll be there with Chad. That's the con put on by the folks at Ultimate. They always do a really great job. They actually had a show in Greensboro not too long ago that unfortunately I had to drop out of at the last minute. So if you were hoping to see me there, or if you were planning on going to that show and want to go to another really fun comic show, come see me. The Durham show, which is Bull City, is relatively small, but it's highly curated, which makes for a really, really cool experience. And it happens in a really cool area right downtown, and there's always like fun stuff at the Carolina Theater going on. Really just very fun convention stuff. The next weekend after that, I actually just found out that I am going to be doing some stuff at Super Famicom, which is a video game convention in Greensboro. If you are a regular listener to the Restronauts podcast, you will know that I am an occasional guest on that show, on the Retronauts East episodes, with Jeremy Parrish and Ben Jedwards. We've been doing a big series on Metroidvanias, which are something that I'm passionate about. And if you listen to the next installment of those that we just recorded, that I think is going to be coming out next month, you will hear me talk about playing Super Metroid for the first time last week. Matt, I know you know this. Did you know Super Metroid's really good?
Yes, we actually talked about this briefly on the show last week. There was some bonus content about particular areas of Super Metroid, but yes, as I mentioned last week, it is my favorite game.
Yeah, I can see why. I'd tried to play it on an emulator a couple times, and it didn't click, but man, that Super NES Classic, just sitting on the floor with the controller in your hand, playing Super Metroid on a television, that game is amazing. So you'll get to hear me talk all about that. And if you come by Super Famicom in Greensboro, you will also be able to see me talk about stuff. And I think I'll have some Sword Quest stuff there, because it seems pretty appropriate for the video game audience. By the way, I will also be bringing Deadpool, because that goes to every show with me. Because there's no wrong audience for the Rob. So yeah, I've got some conventions coming up, and I'm pretty excited about it. Matt, what about you? What are your comforts this week?
Well, my comfort is the help of friends, the help of listeners and friends, because if you listened to the show last week, this is a bit of a continuation from what we talked about last week. Chris, we talked about your new car.
Yeah.
And how you got that Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm.
And how I had a little bit of jealousy about having that Bluetooth. And I got a few different messages from a few different people about how there is technology. We have the technology to plug a thing into an auxiliary jack in a car and sort of make your own Bluetooth setup in a car through the auxiliary jack. And some people directed me to some stuff that they like on Amazon that is that kind of thing. And so I ordered one. I dug one up and I ordered it. It's a Tautronix Bluetooth device that just comes with, it's like a little square, basically. And it has a little headphone jack attached to it. You do have to charge it, which is maybe the one setback of it, because, you know, it only has so much battery life before you have to charge it again. But I haven't tried it yet, but I'm excited to suddenly not have to plug my phone in all the time to be able to listen to music or a podcast when I'm driving. So thank you to anyone who got in touch with me about that and told me about some of that stuff, because I do some of the like Bluetooth speakers and stuff at home. Like I got one that has like a suction cup on it that you can put in the shower so I can listen to podcasts in the shower. But I didn't really realized that I could have one in my car that just plugs in through the auxiliary jack. So now I have less of an excuse to not ever get a new phone. I guess I may get a new phone eventually, but for now I'm just going to use the Bluetooth on the phone I have and have that in my car, which is very nice. Thank you for that comfort, everybody. Thank you for helping me out. And Chris, now it's time for some joys. What's your joy this week?
Well, Matt, I got Mario Odyssey this week, and I've played it a little bit. It's great. I'll talk about that next week, because last night I saw Thor Ragnarok, and that movie rules.
Yes, I'm very excited to see that movie whenever I am able to see it, which I hope will be very, very soon.
I won't spoil anything for you or the listeners. And I know that we usually kind of dive into it, but don't worry, everybody. Here's what I will tell you. One, it is the funniest Marvel movie by far. Which, considering that, like, the Guardians movies are basically comedies, is, I think, saying something. But Taika Waititi's sense of humor and, like, the delivery on all the dialogue is very spot on. Chris Yost and Craig Kyle were the screenwriters on this. I love to imagine them sitting in the theater watching Ghostbusters and being like, fuck, he's funny. He's, like, really funny. Looking at that infuriating man, Chris Hemsworth. So, a lot of really good comedy. The other thing, and I think this will get you hype, Matt.
Okay.
More than anything else, that movie reminds me of Flash Gordon. It's Flash Gordon 2017.
I've heard that elsewhere. I have heard that same assessment from other folks. So it's not like we're just looking for Flash Gordon in whatever we're watching.
No, I mean, look, Flash Gordon is with me always. And I carry him in my heart. And I think a lot of it's because, you know, obviously Thor Ragnarok is taking, you know, bits and pieces of the Simonson run, bits and pieces of Planet Hulk. So it has a very serial feel to it in that, like, it goes from set piece to set piece in a really entertaining way, in the same way that Flash Gordon is built around set piece, set piece, set piece to recapture the nature of the film serials. So I think that feeling comes through. But also just, like, the whole aesthetic, the whole, like... It's not campy, but it is funny in a very, like, earnest and action-packed sort of way. So I really, really loved Ragnarok. It didn't make me cry, so I don't like it as much as I liked Homecoming, which, you know, I was tearing up in the theater when he did the thing. You know, like... You've seen the trailer for Ragnarok. You know that somebody does a thing in this one that usually gets me a little misty. But I didn't cry during Ragnarok. But it is probably my second favorite Marvel movie. I think it has dethroned, personally, Winter Soldier.
It is very interesting to know that Chris Yost and Chris Kyle are the screenwriters on this. Given that Chris Yost... I don't think Chris Kyle was the screenwriter The Dark World. But Chris Yost definitely was... Like, what a difference a director makes, I guess, is what it boils down to.
Yeah, the sensibility that comes in with it, it's so, I mean, it's very much, I think, Taika Waititi's movie. Like, he's even a character in it, and I won't spoil who he is, because I think even that might be a little bit of a spoiler. But if you enjoyed What We Do in the Shadows... And you also like Thor, which that's a circle I think you and I both fall into.
Yes,
then you are going to highly, highly enjoy this movie. I don't regret seeing it opening night. That's how much I liked it. Although I will say this about the theater experience. Matt, you know that I don't like scary movies. You also know that I don't like going to the movies. That's the other thing I don't like. Aiden and I were sitting next to each other just knowing that this bunch of dudes in front of us was going to be a problem. They weren't. Actually, they were very quiet and, like, engaged with the movie. They didn't talk. They just laughed and clapped a couple times when good stuff happened. But one dude, while I was getting popcorn, Aiden texted me because one dude was insisting that he hates trailers, like, as a concept. So while the trailers were on, he was wearing noise-canceling headphones and looking at My Little Pony fan art on his phone. That's a shoot, brother. That happened.
Movie theaters are nightmare places, and I hate them.
They're the worst. Why? Look, I've got MoviePass now, so I've got to see at least two movies a month just to, like, make it worthwhile. And I also bought one of those buckets of popcorn that you can just bring back and have them fill up for $4.50. So I got to be spending a lot of time in movie theaters, and I'm like, it's Tuesday mornings. It's going to be Tuesdays with movies for me from now on. Because I can't take being in the theater with other people.
Tuesdays are good movie days. Fridays are bad movie days.
Fridays are bad movie days. Tuesdays are great. Mornings are amazing. Because let me tell you something. If you go to a movie at 10 a.m., and this is something Aiden has said it well. If you go to a movie at 10 a.m., and there's other people in the theater, those people are there to watch a fucking movie. Like, that's why they're here. They're not here to talk. They're not here to, like, fuck around. We're just here to watch a movie. That's all I want.
This is very true. Very, very true indeed.
So, Matt, Thor Ragnarok, by far my number one source of joy in the past week. What is yours?
So, Chris, I think we can agree that snack situation has got the market cornered on entertainments where two guys try food and then talk about it, right?
I mean, I don't even know who would, like, be coming at the throne on that one, because we've defined it as an art form.
We don't have to worry about competition. You know what I'm saying? Like, we've got it pretty much on lock. So I don't really feel threatened to recommend a video series on YouTube that I've been watching a lot of lately, because our mutual friend Ben Gully and his wife Talisha came to visit me and Marlene a few weeks ago, a little over a month ago, and they were talking about this one particular episode of this YouTube series, which is called Worth It. It's through BuzzFeed, but it's also, the group is called Tasty. Like, they have some kind of agreement, I guess, between BuzzFeed and Tasty to do this show.
Oh, you showed me this.
Yeah. So it's these two guys. One is a bubbly, effervescent type of fellow, and one's a little bit of a curmudgeon, which, you know, I think is maybe stealing from our playbook a little bit, but that's fine. And they go to different places, and the concept of the show is that they go to three places to try the same food item, and the first place they go to is very cheap. The second place is somewhere in a mid-range price range. And then the third place is exorbitantly expensive. A lot of times it is the most expensive version of whatever food they are trying. For example, they did ice cream, and they went to an ice cream parlor, like a little ice cream stand, basically, that just had soft serve. They got their cone there for $1. Then they went to an ice cream parlor where they got, like, you know, $4.50 or $5 ice cream in a bowl. And then the last place they went to, the ice cream was literally $1,000 and had gold in it. So that's the kind of stuff they do. They'll try stuff in those price ranges, and then at the end of the episode, they will say which of those things was worth the price. Now, I think that there's a little bit of a problem with that concept, because it is very obvious that they themselves are not paying for this food. BuzzFeed's paying for it, right? Like, somebody is covering their cost to buy this $1,000 ice cream, or a $777 burger, or $500 fried chicken, right? They go to a fried chicken place where they put caviar on the chicken, and it is – that's the one that Ben and Talisha were talking about all the time, and it's outrageous. It's an outrage. Fried chicken is the food of the people, and it should always be such.
I was infuriated when you showed this to me, because we watched it when we were driving back from Minneapolis. We stayed the night at your place, and you showed this to me and Aiden, and I was like – I was upset by this.
That said, everything but fried chicken, like, generally I enjoy the show, and I enjoy seeing the most expensive version of, like, whatever food that they want to try. And to their credit, almost never do they choose the most expensive food. A lot of times they choose the middle food. But I do think that they would be even more likely to choose either the cheapest or the middle if they had to, like, at least, like, pull their credit card out of their pocket and pay. Just have the feeling of paying for that, spending that much money on something they just ate. And, like, they can get reimbursed or whatever, but that's That's one weird complaint about the show that I have. But anyway.
Yeah. And you have to film it the day rent's due, so you really got to think about it.
So it's a very fun show, though. I really enjoy it. One thing I really like about it is that they go not just to places in the United States. Like, some of the stuff they do in the United States is weird because, like, they go to New York for fried chicken, and I think that there are other places you could go for fried chicken, like Louisiana, like New Orleans, possibly.
The South.
It's anywhere in the South. But they go to New York for fried chicken, and that's fine. But they go to some other countries and try some foods there, and I think those episodes are really great. Like, they go to Australia and try steaks and wine and stuff that Australia is known for. They just did a series of three episodes in Japan where they tried ramen noodles, cake, and coffee.
Ooh, okay.
Which was really, really interesting. They also did some episodes in Korea where they tried like Korean short ribs and some other, I forget what else they tried in Korea, but that stuff was all like very interesting and good. I really like those episodes. So if you're into like just watching like a food show on YouTube, I would absolutely recommend worth it. Just get ready to be mad about fried chicken.
Yeah,
that's all I gotta tell you.
I feel like our version of that show, Matt, is we go and get the Bo Box, which is $16.99, and comes with a half gallon of sweet tea.
Uh-huh.
And then we try...
And like four large sides. There's a lot in the Bo Box.
Then we try like a Popeye's 10 piece. The deal is 12 pieces for the price of 10, which I think is like 20. And then we go to like M. Coco and get like two orders of wings, which would probably be like about $25. And then we go, yeah, these super expensive chicken wings are definitely worth it. They're life changing. But you should get Bojangles sometimes too.
So yeah, with ours, our expensive one never exceeds like $50.
Yeah, and look, I will pay for a good meal. I will pay for like a quality restaurant experience. That is one thing that like Aiden has really introduced me to. Like we've been to Husk, we've been to Beast in Portland. Pok Pok in Portland. Like we ate at a bunch of like. Really good, like pricey places when we travel, but like get the fuck out of here with this. Like, what was it, $500 fried chicken?
I mean, most of the money is being spent not on the chicken, but on the caviar.
Oh, just get out of here.
Well, you let us know what you think about dipping chicken in caviar, because it led to a near argument with some of the other people I've talked to about this. All right. Those are our comforts and joys. Chris, let's talk about some of the comics of the week. What do you say?
Let's do it.
So, Chris, we talked a little bit about Batman White Knight issue 1 when that came out. Now issue 2 is out. Where do you stand, my friend?
Listeners may remember that I gave the first issue a pretty heavily qualified wreck, I think. You know, I said it was interesting. Like, I'm curious to see where it was going. But there were bits and pieces of it that, like, I thought were getting a little uncomfortable. This second issue ramps up both of those ideas to the extreme. As a story, I think it's fascinating. Like, it's a really interesting take on what, you know, a version of the Joker that could, at least, you know, theoretically at this point in the story, go straight. And, like, what that would mean for Batman and what that would mean for, like, the idea of the Joker scheming. I really like in this issue, one of the pieces that comes out of this one is that there are two Harley Quinns, and it's basically like a modern post New 52, like Margot Robbie Harley Quinn. It was just like, yeah, let's go kill people and have sex. Then the original Harley Quinn, who's dressed like Bruce Timm Harley Quinn, comes back and it's like, yeah. She like, this was like, I left and she replaced me and you didn't even notice, you know, you did like, I loved you despite your flaws, and she loved you because of them. And I think that's a really interesting commentary on the way Harley Quinn as a character has changed over the years. From someone who's like really, really sympathetic and kind of caught up in this horrible situation, to someone who is still in that horrible situation, but is like a mass murderer in her own right. You know, like I really took issue with that story where she kills 18 children on panel from a couple years ago. There's also this idea that, like, the Joker's crimes affect, like, real estate prices in Gotham City. So there's, like, Bruce Wayne's at a party, and this guy's talking about how he just, like, you know, flips all the houses. Like, as soon as there's a Joker crime spree, like, he buys all the houses and then flips them back once the city has footed the bill for the repairs. So, like, really interesting stuff and a really interesting, like, take on you know, Jack Napier as a character. You might recall, though, that when that first issue came out, the thing that really bugged me was that there was a kind of 2017 version of the Frank Miller Talking Heads. You know, yeah. the post RoboCop, or I guess pre RoboCop, since Dark Knight Returns came first, like the 80s Talking Heads. And the way that it was treated was that there were these two obviously super conservative, obviously super liberal commentators talking about the Joker and what he meant. This issue carries that on forward. There's this idea that Jack Napier, having been cured of being the Joker, is explaining that, like, he was just a guy who robbed a bank, and because he was mentally ill, I guess he calls them the gatekeepers, like the people who are in charge of Gotham City, used him as an excuse and like pumped him full of drugs that made him crazier and crazier and crazier so that they could monetize crime and normalize vigilantism, which, again, I think that at its core is a really interesting idea. The way these two, like, commentators react to it is, again, very both sides-y in a way that I find uncomfortable, especially because Sean Murphy goes into talking about protests in Gotham City that are in support of the Joker. And for one of them, he redraws the very famous photo of the woman in Baton Rouge. You know the photo. She's in the dress and she's, yes, like walking towards the cops, and the cops are like backing off of her. He redraws that as part of this story set in Gotham City, but it's people rallying behind the Joker and using the Joker as a sort of focal point to protest against Gotham's mistreatment of minorities. And, like, it's the fucking Joker. Like Matt, he's the worst supervillain. Like, even in this, you know, Elseworlds story, I think that's like a really like weird and kind of volatile thing to put out there.
It's probably not the best time to use a photo reference.
It's not the time. And again, like, I feel like there's so much interesting stuff going on in the story that's genuinely a lot better than I thought it was going to be at first, and a lot more compelling. But there's all of these, like, single elements that I'm like, yeah, you don't need to have the imagery of people who are protesting violence against minorities conflated with people who are like, yeah, you know what? The Joker's right. Like, even if that's the premise of your story, it's at best a weird and kind of tone-deaf moment. Obviously, Murphy's going for a lot of political commentary in this story. I think you're right when you say it's probably not the time.
I mean, there's a considerable. I haven't actually gotten to read the issue, like, closely yet, but there is a lot of reference, it feels like, in the book. Like those two commentators that you're talking about almost certainly are supposed to look like Charlie Rose, who is not a conservative commentator per se. He's like a PBS TV host, right? Mm-hmm. And Gail King. Like, there's also, like, just tons of, like, very direct references in terms of design to Batman the Animated Series. Like, there's a short scene with Mr. Freeze in here that is straight up Batman the Animated Series Mr. Freeze.
Oh, it's more influenced, like, it's more building off Batman the Animated Series than anything else. Like, to the point of Nightwing and Batgirl kind of behaving like they do in Batman the Animated Series. And even, you know, there's a scene in here with Joker almost killing Robin, and it's Jason Todd, but he doesn't beat him with a crowbar. It's like a completely different setup that feels a lot more like something that would have happened in Batman the Animated Series. Because, again, it's not quite Batman Beyond Return of the Joker either. But I feel like it's in the way that Dark Knight Returns is Batman 66 filtered through, like, 80s media. I feel like this is Batman the Animated Series filtered through 2017 media, which is a really good idea. And I'm not even saying it's not done interestingly, but I don't think it's done well enough to pull it off this level of bluntness, you know, like this level of redrawing that photograph. And if it hadn't been the real life photograph recreated as part of this Batman story, I think it would have gone down a lot easier, or at least not made me more uncomfortable than that first issue did. But this is certainly like it's a little dodgy at best.
Well, we'll see where it goes. There's still six more issues of this series. I'm kind of shocked that this is going to be an 8-issue series, because it feels like so much has gone on in 2 issues already. Another comic I wanted to talk about, and boy howdy, what a single issue of comic books. It might be my favorite single issue of the entire year. That is Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, #6. Now, Chris, I don't know if you've been keeping up with this Chip Zdarsky series, but I would absolutely recommend you finding this one issue and reading it, because it's about something we talk about all the time, and it's also just incredible. Like it is literally, it's called My Dinner with Jonah, and it is entirely about Peter Parker and J. Jonah Jameson having an interview at Jonah's apartment at Jonah's request. It's, as I said, it's written by Chip Zdarsky. The art is by Michael Walsh. And it's almost entirely just this conversation between Spider-Man and J. Jonah Jameson. And they get into it. They get into their entire history. They get into Marla's death and how that happened, why that happened, both of their takes on it. They both make very strong points for their sides. Spider-Man does not mess around with saying, like, you've tried to kill me on multiple occasions, especially when you were mayor. It is a really, really incredible character study of both of these guys and 50-some years of history between them. I have to give it to Zdarsky in particular for the script on this issue, and for Michael Walsh for like imbuing it with a ton of emotion when one of the people engaged in this conversation has his face covered through the whole thing. Peter makes a big decision at the end of this, and it makes sense that he would do this by the end of this issue, because Jonah sort of puts all his emotions on the table and talks about like how he has gotten to this point in his life and why he's doing what he's doing, and like how he's been ostracized from the Daily Bugle. For deep cut Spider-Man fans who love these two characters, this is extremely good. This is an extremely good look at these two characters, and develops a lot of tension and a lot of, you know, deep storytelling just in a conversation sitting around a table. It's great. I loved it.
I mean, that sounds good. I do love dinner, and I do love J. Jonah Jameson.
They eat lasagna.
Of course they do. Of course they do. And just wait a minute, say, you know what I like to eat, because it's the food of my favorite cartoon cat.
When he arrives, he says, Jonah, I can't believe you invited me here on a Monday. Chris, one last comic we want to talk about is one that's actually coming out next week.
Yeah, I fucked up. I read an advanced review copy instead of a comic that came out next week, but I read it at like 7:50 and we started recording at 8, so that's what I'm here to talk about.
That's Rock Candy Mountain #5.
Yeah. Remember how I talked about how maybe like it's like the wrong time for that scene in Batman White Knight? Well, Rock Candy Mountain #5 is just all about Jackson beating the shit out of Nazis.
Yeah.
Which it's the right time for all the time, every time. This is going to be out this Wednesday, and it's, of course, from Kyle Starks and Chris Schweitzer. And it's Jackson's origin story, which is extremely good and has a really fun essay from our pal Benito in it about a subject that comes up in the origin story that I shall not spoil. So definitely check that out.
Every issue of that book has been good. And this one sounds like it is no exception. Chris, now that we have talked about some comics, let's dive in to some panel president lists. What do you say?
Only if you bring Harrison.
Well, he's coming.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
From the president's office in the White House.
President. Panel president. You
can hear the cheer coming. Now, what is the panel president list?
Panel president. We take some listener-submitted lists and place those characters on a huge, ever-expanding master list from best to worst. We elect the best characters and we impeach the worst characters. Panel president. This is panel president. And Chris, are you ready to just dive into a list from Jeff Wickstrom?
I am ready.
Okay, these are some deep cut characters, I must say.
I do like deep cuts. Matt, we love deep cuts.
We do. First on Jeff's list is FaZe, a.k.a. Enya Wazzo, the wrong Wazzo.
I have no idea who that is.
She is a DC Comics character from the Legion.
What? Oh, Tenya Wazzo.
Tenya Wazzo.
Oh, she's Enya, not Tenya. She's the one from the licensed extra-governmental interstellar operatives network, not the Legion of Superheroes. I don't fuck with that, Matt.
Okay. I'm wondering if these are all Legion characters from that version of Legion.
They might be.
Are we skipping out on FaZe?
I have never read a single issue of Legion 89, Legion 90, Legion 91, or Legion 92.
Okay, this one I think is from the regular Legion of Superheroes.
Hit me.
This is Laurel Gand, a.k.a. Andromeda, a.k.a. the Flying Buttress.
I do like Laurel Gand. Laurel Gand, she, I believe, like Largand, a.k.a. Mon-El, a.k.a. Valor, a.k.a. Ma'anel, she was a Supergirl stand-in. I really love stand-in characters, Matt. Like, I love when, for whatever reason, they can't use this character anymore. We talked about Leviathan, I believe, the last time we did Panel President.
We did indeed, yes.
I love Iron Monroe, who's the stand-in Golden Age Superman. I love Mon-El. Laurel Gand is a post-crisis version of Laurel Kent, who was a distant descendant of Superman, who I believe was in a relationship with Shrinking Violet. But that might just be like something I made up, because I know Shrinking Violet and Lightning Lass were together for a while. Anyway, Laurel Gand's great. She's Supergirl, if Supergirl was like mean.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
We have a type.
Yeah. Yep, pretty much. I don't like her as much as I like the like Supergirl, obviously, like right, yeah. Kara Zor-El, who I love as a character. But I think she's pretty good. Like, distant future Supergirl is a pretty strong concept for a character.
Okay, how does she measure up against, say, Ninjet?
I like Ninjet more because I feel like I know that as a Legion fan, I'm an anomaly. Like, I'm not crazy about the 5 years later Legion where it gets all dystopian. I think Ninjet pulls off, like, the dark stuff better.
Okay, if we go way further down the list, we have Valkyrie and Miss Misery and Dazzler.
I don't think she's as good as any of them, actually.
Okay.
I don't think she's as good as Sharon Carter, Garfield, Power Girl. I mean, like, I think she's probably on par with Linda Danvers' Supergirl.
Okay.
So I would maybe put Linda Danvers Supergirl above Laurel Gand.
So between
I would probably put Ted Knight above her too, and probably put Harley Quinn. She does go above Hank Pym.
Okay, so between Harley Quinn and Hank Pym goes Laurel Gand.
So Andromeda, Laurel Gand, enters the list number 150 out of 281, so right in the middle of the pack.
Okay, next up on Jeff's list is another DC character, not a member of any Legion that I'm aware of, though. This is Fire, a.k.a. Green Flame, a.k.a.
Beatriz DaCosta?
Beatriz DaCosta. No, wait.
Yeah, I love Fire.
Formerly,
Fire's great.
Formerly of the Super Friends, formerly of the Justice League, formerly of Checkmate.
Yeah, the super buddies.
That's right.
Formerly of everyone just saying, please just go ahead and make this ship canon. You named them Fire and Ice.
It is true.
I like Beatriz DaCosta a lot. She's a fascinating character because she is like she's created as one of those like, you know, Super Friends era. Let's get some international heroes and then becomes a really, really strong character under Giffen and Demetrius. These might all be like weird Keith Giffen characters now that I think I see the theme.
Could be. You know, maybe we're bringing costumes into this more often than we should. Fire has dealt with some bad, bad costumes over the years.
Like, yeah.
They've been rough. They've been a rough
She's got
go.
A cool jacket.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That is totally fair. Like, the version of her that exists now, where she's basically just a green fire lady, is easily the best version of Fire, I think.
I like the Brave and the Bold version of her original costume. Like, it's a riff on her original costume, but it's Brave and the Bolded up a little bit for the cartoon.
Yeah.
And it's really good. But much like Johnny Storm, like when she activates her powers, she's just like a fire lady, which is always a cool look.
Yes. And I think that's typically the way that she has been portrayed. Like, so that's how she was in Justice League Unlimited when she was on that.
So you're telling me you don't like the cool jacket and the low rise jeans?
I mean, that one is better than some of the others. Her original costume doesn't look great initially. The like weird high collar, low neckline thing looks pretty bad. It just makes her look like Poison Ivy. Like she's had some not great costumes.
She is. I will confess. I like the jacket and what is that? Is that a bustier? And the low rise jeans, but literally only when Kevin Maguire draws it. Like anybody else, please don't.
Yeah, you need a particular type of artist to pull that off. No doubt. Yeah.
It is very much of its time, I think. But yeah, like especially when she shows up in Checkmate and she's a little more serious, but still has like that core of being like, you know, like a fun person and like a fun character. Like I think she's really strong and like surprisingly adaptable in a way that I don't think people might expect just from seeing her as like the sexy one in the Giffen Demetrius International League.
Yeah. She's a pretty versatile character, for sure.
The one thing that like really holds her back is that they like, I think maybe they might have like, it might be New 52, continuity that she and Ice actually finally got together. But like, that was such a long time coming and should have happened like in 1989 at the latest.
I mean, yeah, it was such an obvious thing from the get-go.
But yeah, I really like Fire. I think Fire is very cool.
Okay, what's the ballpark here? What's the neighborhood?
There is that bit in formerly known as the Justice League where she's like a cam girl. No disrespect. It's just like treated like very obviously written by like dudes in their like 50s.
Yeah.
Like as a joke, like as a gag of like, look how far these characters are fallen. And in fairness, that's not like she's not the only character that is treated like that. Booster Gold is also a gigolo in that that series. So I don't know, like, but it's not her finest hour.
Well, I mean, you know, like it's not necessarily that the sex work in itself is bad. It's that the portrayal is that it's bad, right?
The treatment of it is bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be looking, you know, I mean, north of Andromeda. I certainly like her more than I like Andromeda. I don't think I like her as much as I like Power Girl.
I mean, that's fair.
I like Power Girl is quite a bit. Yeah.
Power Girl is extremely good. I think between Linda Danvers and Power Girl.
Yeah, I think that's a good place for her.
Okay. Well, get
it's
ready.
It's weird that, like, she and Sunspot are, I think, the at least the two most prominent South American superheroes, and they have the same last name.
Go figure. Da Costa just rolls off the tongue, I suppose. Up next, get ready for this 1-2 punch. Ice. A.K.A. Ice Maiden, a.k.a. Tora Olafsdottir.
Better than Fire. Weirdly way more complicated.
Yes, way more complicated, for sure.
Because she ended up being like a... like she dies and comes back. She ends up being like a... she's a fairy, right?
Well, she was a literal ghost. For a while.
Right. No, she's just from an isolated tribe of magic wielding Norsemen.
Yeah,
she's a wizard princess.
Yes,
but yeah, like she has some real weird stuff going on. And again, should have been it's obviously intended to be, if you go back and read those stories, should have been like an explicit canonical love triangle between her, Fire, and Guy Gardner. And the interesting thing is, her, like, relationship with Guy Gardner is one of the most interesting parts of the International League. Like, it's a really, like, strong character piece, because he's such a piece of shit. And she's so nice. But I like her as a... I think as a pure character that I'm, like, would be, like, excited about reading... about, I think I like her a little more than Fire, but she is very complicated.
Extremely complicated. Like, there's the whole thing, and I can't believe it's not the Justice League, where she is in hell.
Yeah!
Yeah. Like, she's had the whole death and rebirth thing happen. She also got corrupted by the anti-life equation.
Yeah, Final Crisis. That happens in everybody. Because there's a Checkmate tie-in, and Fire was on Checkmate. That's not a bad story.
It's not. It's good. It's just, you know, it's another complication to Ice as a character. And she does always have that tie-in to Guy Gardner. Like,
yes.
That's the thing that prevented her from getting together with Fire for so long, because she was with Guy Gardner.
Yeah, which is why there should have been a love triangle. And honestly, that relationship should have ended with Justice League International, and both of those characters should have moved on, and Ice and Fire should have moved on as a couple, and Guy as a miserable bastard.
Yes.
But that doesn't happen, you know? That doesn't happen. So we can only judge it by what's on the page, not what's not.
And I guess we should note that Ice was really created as a counterpoint to Fire.
Yes.
Ice was created much later than Fire was.
Yeah. Was she created later? Because I thought they were both...
Yeah.
No, Ice Fire Maiden was created around before.
Yes. But this version of Ice... Actually, Ice Maiden is a different character.
Oh my god, I forgot Ice Maiden's a different character.
Yeah. So Fire first appeared in Super Friends. This version of Ice doesn't show up until Justice League International.
Right, because it's Green Flame and Ice Maiden, and then Fire and Ice, and then Ice Maiden then becomes Ice after Ice dies and is canonically bisexual.
It's like we said, it's complicated.
Why do we like these? Why do we like these things, Matt?
Don't ask me.
Why didn't we get into, like, I don't know, kites? How about kites? You get outside on a nice windy day, you know, have some fun.
Sure. Boogie boarding.
Anyway, I like ice.
Boogie boarding.
Boogie boarding would be the perfect hobby for you. You've got such a boogie boardable body type.
I think you're right. Okay, so you said we probably like ice better than fire. How much more?
A little bit, I think. Yeah. I mean, it's they should go together, okay. Right?
That right above. Right above?
Yeah, I think right above. Well, I don't know. Fire's got, like, the good stuff in Checkmate.
That is true.
But, like, I think Ice is a better character in JLI.
I feel like Fire has proven herself to be more versatile, to be quite honest, than Ice. I think Fire right above Ice is what I would suggest.
All right, so Tora Olofsdottir enters the list number 147, right above Fire at 148.
Finally here on Jeff's list is Jam, a.k.a. the Bloodlines character Sobad.
Fuck off.
Everybody pretends he never existed and that Gunfire was the worst Bloodlines character.
God, I did forget about Jam. Matt, Jam is from the Legion of Superheroes, but he's a cool 90s teen who wound up in the future with his skateboard and joined the Legion.
Yeah, he had he has American Gladiators hair and a hat that looks like a backwards baseball cap, but it's not a backwards baseball cap. It's extremely like a do-rag. He's got like a do-rag.
I will say this. Here's what makes Gunfire worse. Gunfire had like fucking 12 issues to get going. Jam appears like four times, I think. Because he does stick around for a hot minute.
Jam is just Adam X the Extreme if he sucked.
Ooh, that's good.
Jam,
real quick?
Two M's. Double M.
Double M, yeah.
Jam is that character from that Zero issue of Mage that came out a few months ago.
Oh, man. You mean the Mage comic that's 100% set in, like, 1997?
Yes. That's the one.
Yeah. Oh, man. I did just find a pinup of Jam and Andromeda together. Jam is exactly what they were parodying with Poochie.
You're not kidding.
Because he even has the, like, what does he say when he gets his powers? It's like, oh, this is totally kick butt. Which no one has ever said.
Yes, this is totally kick butt. Right. Prodigious.
Ugh. God. He's very bad.
What even were Jam's powers?
And then he also, like, he can like control your mind, and so one of the first things he does is he makes a woman take her clothes off. Shadow Lass. He makes Shadow Lass take her clothes off because he can like he has mind powers.
Gross. Extremely gross.
Babe alert. Hey, Crepe Suzette, let's see you take your clothes off. That's what he says to a robot.
Oof.
It's a robot. Oh. It's a robot Marie Antoinette.
He's got Jesse Custer powers. He's got the word of God.
Yeah. Hey, Jim might be the worst.
Yeah.
Jam might go at the bottom of the fucking list, Matt.
Is Jam honestly worse than Hemogoblin? Or Marcus? Or Cal AOL Turner?
The first thing he does is mentally command Shadow Lass to...
I mean, that is extremely gross and terrible.
Yeah.
He's... Okay. That puts him... That makes him... on par-ish with Marcus.
Why are we have to talk about all these characters that we hate talking about? Just pick a number. 281, 282, or 283. I don't think he's as bad as Hemogoblin.
Below Cal AOL Turner. Above Marcus.
Oof, that's Jam. Jam was a bottom shooter, guys.
Yeah, it was intentional. I think it was very intentional on Jeff's part.
God. Jam. What is his real name?
Who cares?
I gotta put it on the list.
His real name is unknown. He's just Jam.
Oh. He's a prodigious skater dude, accidentally teleported to the 31st century during the events of Bloodlines with Timberwolf. Real name unknown. God, so Jam, that's it. Fucking 282 out of 284.
Yeah, extremely bad. Here is a list from Matt. That's my name, Robothum.
That is your name.
Robotham. I've been saying it wrong the whole time. It rhymes with Gotham. Thank you for telling me that, Matt. It's Matt Robotham. No theme to this list, but some big names on here. I'll tell you straight up, these are some big names. First up, well, this one's going to be tough for us. I'm going to tell you straight up, breaking it at this time in history, this is going to be hard. The Punisher, Frank Castle.
I like him.
I like him.
I like him.
He is becoming, in the past, like, 2 or 3 years, he has become increasingly problematic.
Okay, here's my answer to that, Matt. There's a lot of fucking assholes with Superman tattoos.
That's true.
And that doesn't make Superman a bad character. Just because there's a lot of people who like the Punisher for shitty, stupid reasons and don't get it, that doesn't mean he's a bad character.
I mean, I can sympathize with that. I understand that.
I mean, and we do consider cultural impact. We do consider, like, real world events. But I do firmly, like, stand by the idea as someone who, like, I've read them all up to the past few years where I you know, fell behind on everything. I've read a lot of Punisher comics. There's a lot of Punisher comics by creators who have since revealed themselves to be bad people. But that doesn't mean the character is bad. Like, we have on this list Dr. Doom, who once skinned a woman and made a suit of her skin, at number 3.
I mean, look, yes, I mean, I see your point there. But Dr. Doom is a villain. The problem with the Punisher is that he's presented as a hero and an aspirational character, at least for some. I think the best Punisher stories, and my counterpoint to problematic Punisher is Garth Ennis, right? Like, Garth Ennis does not make the Punisher an aspirational character.
Yeah, like, and specifically, the Punisher kills people who want to be like the Punisher. Yes. That's how his run begins and ends.
That's the first Garth Ennis Punisher story. If we had done this 2 years ago, Frank Castle would have been way up high on the list, no problem. In 2017, it feels a little icky. But it's not even because the character changed.
Yeah. The Punisher is my favorite character that I would never buy a t-shirt of.
Right.
You know? And if I see, like, if I see somebody out and about with, like, Punisher gear, and again, as a fan of the character, I had a complete run. I know that person and I probably aren't getting along. And I'm a little bit leery of them. But, like, I don't... He's not a bad character. He's a very interesting character because, like a lot of our favorite characters, he's an idea taken to its extreme.
Yes.
And the trick of the Garth Ennis stories is that Frank is only the hero because everyone else is worse. And that's why Punisher Max is such a formulaic comic, because it's always 6 issues, and it's always 3 issues of showing you why these people need to die, and then 3 issues of them getting killed. And I'm not saying that's the only way to write the Punisher, but that's an effective way to write the Punisher. And I don't think as a character, he is responsible. And I don't think the creators of those stories are responsible for people latching onto the wrong things. Does that mean that, like, maybe Frank should go away for a while? Maybe. Like, if a bunch of people were latching onto the wrong things about the Fantastic Four, we'd certainly put them away for less of a reason.
Well, I mean, it's certainly the Punisher has gone away before. Not necessarily because of cultural reasons, more just because of oversaturation.
Well, he's gone away because of unpopularity, as opposed to going away because of the wrong kind of popularity.
Yeah. I'll say this. I think there's a right kind of Punisher story and there's a wrong kind of Punisher story.
Yes.
The right kind of Punisher story is when the Punisher is presented almost as a force of nature, or at the very least as a man who is so driven and so laser focused that he's unchangeable, right? The Punisher is a constant. The Punisher is not someone to relate to. He's almost like a robot or a god who appears when someone deserves to die, right? And the work has to be building up the people who have to die to the point where the reader is like, that motherfucker needs to die. And then the Punisher shows up and provides that, right?
Which is what, like, Ennis and, like, Gorlin Parlov were incredibly good at.
And it's what the Becky Cloonan run on Punisher has also done, to her credit. What doesn't necessarily work as a Punisher story is, oh, here's the Punisher, he's just a guy. Like, here's the Punisher, he's a guy, and maybe he'll change, right? Because he's not going to change.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, you talked about, like, 2 years ago, and I think back to, when we had Greg Rucka on, when he was doing Punisher, and he talked about, like, how, you know, Frank's not broken as a character, he's broken as a person. And, you know, a friend of mine, my friend Scott, once summed up the Punisher by saying that, like, when you watch the news and something terrible has happened, which is all the time, and you get so angry and you wish you could, you know, do something and stop the people that are like destroying and being terrible, like that level of anger that you're feeling at that moment is the level of anger that the Punisher is at when he, like, gets up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. Like, he's that embodied. And I think there's a lot of value to that as a character. Like, I don't think he's a bad character. I don't think he's a bad protagonist. I think that he's a lot easier to take when you're distanced from the realistic things that he can represent. And I feel like there's a trend towards realistic treatments of the Punisher that began in the mid-90s. That has made that harder and harder and harder to deal with. The best Punisher stories aren't, like, you know, fantastical. But, you know, they've got the Russian in them. They've got the Mennonite. They've got Jigsaw, who are, you know, weird cartoon supervillains. The worst Punisher stories are fucking Punisher Armory, which is insane because it's a comic where a guy is writing in character about guns you could actually buy from real companies that were mentioned in the comic.
Yes.
When he's done well, he's a good and a solid character. Like, and I think what makes him so problematic is that he's more rooted in the real world than any other comic book character, like any other superhero comics character I can think of. Like, he's a Vietnam veteran explicitly in the Ennis stuff and in the 70s when he's created, and in the 80s in the Baron run. Like, he's explicitly a Vietnam veteran. He's explicitly a veteran of a real world conflict that people are still suffering the effects of. He uses very realistic weaponry that, again, you know, Punisher Armory would be like, Elliot R. Brown would draw, like, faithful recreations of guns. And, like, I get why people are uncomfortable with that. Like, it's, you know, I don't think it's wrong to be uncomfortable with him. I don't think he's a bad character. I really don't. But I get it. I get it.
We got to do it. We got to assign a number to this guy.
Well, the good news is that we've got enough really good characters on this list that I don't think he's going to be, like, upsettingly high on the list.
Yeah, I mean,
but I don't think he goes down with, like, Hemogoblin and Marcus.
No,
you know?
No, not at all. But does he crack the top 25?
He doesn't crack the top 25. Because number 25 on the list is fucking Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I mean, does
he's not better than Wonder Woman.
Does he beat Lucky Jim?
He doesn't beat Lucky Jim.
Okay.
I'm looking at, like, I don't think he beats Charlie Brown. But I do think he's maybe better than Archie.
Well, you know, they did meet that one time. I'm fine. Okay, I could put him between Snake Eyes and Archie.
Here's the question, Matt. Is he better than Snake Eyes? Which is a very comparable character.
Yeah, interestingly enough.
Snake Eyes is the Punisher as a comic book character. Because, I mean, the trick of the Punisher is that he's a men's adventure novel character, right? Like, he's Mac Bolan, the executioner. Like, he comes from a different tradition. Snake Eyes is what? Snake Eyes is a Vietnam veteran who uses realistic weaponry, but he's also a fucking silent ninja.
Yes, exactly so.
So is he better or worse than Snake Eyes? I can't make this judgment, Matt. Those are my two children.
I was gonna leave that call to you. My personal preference is the Punisher over Snake Eyes.
Then I think we put him. Oh my God! It's the perfect place for him, between Charlie Brown and Snake Eyes.
So it's written.
And again, like, I don't want to dismiss any, like, real world concerns about, like, people's weird embracing of the Punisher. Like, I think we both agree that that's wrong, and I think there are a lot of serious issues, but I think as a comic book character, he is valid and enjoyable. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, as I've said before, we're not the ones who suck, and in some degree, Frank's not the one who sucks. It's the people who have taken the wrong message that suck. Okay, next on Matt's list is The Hulk, Bruce Banner.
I like that guy.
I do too.
He's not my favorite.
We have an established ceiling for this, though, because we've said it many times. We said it when we ranked She-Hulk. He does not go above She-Hulk.
No. And I mean, look, I just saw fucking Thor Ragnarok last night, so I'm pretty in favor of The Hulk right now.
Pro-Hulk.
But I was also writing about it, and I realized that, like, I don't know if there's maybe five Hulk stories that I love. Like, five solo Hulk stories. And, like, three of them are Bill Mantlo stories, and two of them are Greg Pak stories. Like,
yeah.
Planet Hulk, World War Hulk, Days of Rage, that one where he beats the shit out of the West Coast Avengers, and Jarella's World. And that's kind of it for me and the Hulk. But I like him.
So many Hulk stories, particularly if you go back to the Peter David, the long, long Peter David run on Hulk. They're just about Banner trying to get his shit together, right? Like, every story is about Banner trying to get his shit together.
Well, that's literally what Future Imperfect is. Future Imperfect is just like, hey, get your shit together or this is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's always Banner trying to get his shit together. And there's nothing wrong with that kind of story. Like, if you are a person who is dealing with some mental stuff of your own, it's easy to relate to. And it's appreciable. The problem is, I think, Hulk stories never confront that issue really head on because there's always got to be a Hulk, right? Like, he's never going to get rid of his demons. He's just going to sidestep to another iteration where it's either Smart Hulk or Gray Hulk or Mr. Fix-It or Rampaging Hulk where he's Hulk all the time or Hulk with Banner's brain or, you know, there's so many different versions. And, I mean, it's not that that's not entertaining. It's just, like, you can't ever really solve the Hulk problem, right? Like, Banner's never going to be okay. He's always going to be pretty messed up.
I think I reread Future Imperfect today, and I think my favorite part of that story is that the message of it is, if you thought things were bad when you had an uncontrollable rage, this is how bad they can get if you learn to control your rage instead of learning to not have it.
Yeah.
And I think that's like that's really cool. That's like a really cool idea. Like the whole, you can do a lot of cool things with the Hulk that aren't readily apparent from like, you know, just the simple like Jekyll and Hyde anger monster angle that he starts with. Here's my question for you, Matt. We know he doesn't go above Jennifer Walters, the Sensational She-Hulk. Is he the worst of the original Avengers?
Well, let's
Cap,
name them off.
Thor, Iron Man, well, Cap, Wasp, Ant-Man.
Cap didn't show up until number 4.
Okay, fine. But like the you know what I mean. Like
Thor,
the Thor,
Iron Man.
The original, okay,
Ant-Man.
Not the original Hulk. Avengers. The early 60s Marvel roster.
Yeah. I mean
Cap, Thor, Iron Man, Spidey, and the FF.
Cap is clearly better, right? Like Cap is.
Oh, Cap's obviously better.
So like that's not even a question anymore.
I think Thor is better.
Thor is better. Iron Man's better.
I think Iron Man's the tough one, though.
Wasp is tough, and Ant-Man is tough.
I think he's better than Hank Pym.
Yeah.
I don't think he's better than the concept of Ant-Man.
Ant-Man or the Wasp, necessarily. But like, yeah. Here's another point to make about the Hulk. His best conflict, and the conflict that leads to the best stories. Well, okay. I was going to say his best conflict is internal, right? And when you give him external conflicts, they feel a little manufactured. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing wrong with the leader or the Abomination, but they're not great villains.
Yeah, I think the problem with the Hulk is that he doesn't have a lot of good villains.
Well, because all his villains are just sort of other Hulks, right? They're other versions of the Hulk.
They're horror movie monsters in the way that he's a horror movie monster.
Well, they're also like either super smart and green or super huge and blue or like whatever. They're just like other Hulks. And that's because the Hulk's conflict is always within himself. It's always – he doesn't actually want to be the Hulk. He wants to figure out how to not be the Hulk. He just wants a normal life. And so when you give him external conflicts, they don't always work. But the external conflicts that do work are when he's taking on the heroes. It's because he's a wild card. It's because he's an X Factor and not a member of X Factor. He's unpredictable. That's what's good about the Hulk, right? That's why throwing him into the Avengers movies makes sense.
Here's my counterpoint for you, though, Matt. Planet Hulk is entirely external conflict.
That's true.
Like in fact, like the whole quest of that book, the whole journey is this is a place where Banner and the Hulk can be happy, united as one. But there's something in their way first, which is very external.
Yeah, but you have to take him off of Earth to do that, right?
Well, yeah, you have to create a whole new fantasy world setting where he's a gladiator.
Yeah, yeah. You have to do a lot of legwork to make that happen. I think that is the problem of the Hulk. I do think that if you compare him against the other early Marvel characters, the only ones he might beat would be potentially Ant-Man and Wasp. Everybody else is better, including the Fantastic Four.
Hank Pym's at 154. She-Hulk is at 31.
Yep.
So that's our range.
Well, we also have Reed Richards on here.
Oh, that's right. We do have Big Reed.
Yeah.
Big double R.
Okay, here's...
Remember when Bobby Roode did the Spine Buster and they called it the double R Spine Buster because he did it like Arn Anderson's double A Spine Buster?
I do remember that.
That's kind of rough.
Here's what I would say. He's not as good as Mr. Fantastic. I do think he's better than – probably better than Swamp Thing. Although, I don't know. I don't think he's better than Beast. He's not better than Beast. He's not a better monster smart
he's
guy.
He's not better than Beast. That's oh, my stars and garters, Matt. He's not better than the Beast. I think where – okay, here's where I know – here's where I know we can put him. He's better than Hercules.
Yes.
Because Hercules has only been good for about 10 years.
That's true. Yes. And he's on and off good now, so.
He's on and off good. And he would not be good if it wasn't for the Hulk. Is he better than Mystique? Is he better than Emma Frost? Is he better than Black Cat? I think you could argue he's better than Black Cat. Personally, I don't think so, but I really like Black Cat. She's one of my favorite Spider-Man characters.
She's great.
Is he better than Cable? Maybe? I don't know. It's really tough.
Okay, so
if we know that he's not better than the Beast, anything below that is like... Like, until you get under Hercules, Beast is at 71, Hercules is at 81. Anywhere in that range, I think you could make an argument for.
Yeah.
But he is a good character with a lot of good stories. And I will say this. This is my final argument that I'll make, Matt. He's shockingly adaptable.
It's true.
You can do so much with Hulk because over the years, and I have to give credit to Peter David for a lot of this because he was the guy who did a lot of it. There's a lot of different Hulks.
I think that you could paint that, because I did earlier, as both the pro and a con of Hulk, and that's how you have to figure out ways to new Hulk stories is to give him whole new personalities.
But I think that's happened for long enough that it's a thing about his character. And like, you know, the quote-unquote split personality, that's there from the beginning. Like, that's his deal.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so I would say I don't think he's better than the Kingpin. But I could put him I could put him above Jesse Custer, I think.
I think we need to put him there, then.
Okay.
So at number 73, between Kingpin and Jesse Custer, the Hulk, Bruce Banner.
Next on Matt's list is The Goon.
I like The Goon.
Eric Powell's The Goon.
He got a fucked up face.
He got a fucked up face. He's got a hat that covers part of that face.
He got a pipe. Big hands.
He definitely got a pipe. He looks like he could be in The Gorillas.
He does look like he could be in The Gorillas.
I've always thought that. I've always thought that particular Eric Powell style, like, looks like these two guys that existed, like, you know, 50 years before The Gorillas. Some kind of Gorillas pre-group. No, I like The Goon. He's a blunt object of a character.
He is, but you've read Chinatown, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
That sequence in Chinatown where he's looking into the mirror and has a breakdown is like one of the best sequences in comics. I'm going to go ahead and throw that out there. That sequence in Chinatown where it's just page, 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 full splashes of the goon breaking down in a mirror is really fucking good. And part of that is because, you know, like, Chinatown came out, like, well into The Goon being a going concern at Dark Horse.
Yes.
So it was, you know, well established that, like, the goofy, funny stuff. Like, I think Powell had even done, like, Superman comics before that.
Yeah.
Before that or right after?
Chinatown was after 20-some issues of The Goon already happening. Yeah. And through those 20-some issues, The Goon was a constant. He was a blunt object, like I said. And really, in most of the stories after that, that's what The Goon has also been. So Chinatown is a real – I don't know if aberration is the right word. But it's a different kind of story. And a really good one.
Well, like, it's an origin.
Yeah.
Of sorts.
Yes.
Till he gets his face all fucked up.
But more often than not, he's just a guy with a fucked up face and some big arms who's got, like, kind of a Popeye thing going on who beats up monsters.
The character that he's comparable to is Hellboy.
No, you're right.
And Hellboy's better.
That is also
true. So he doesn't beat Anunganrama Hellboy.
Yeah.
Who's at number 13. But, you know, he's not bad.
No, he's not bad. I really like – like every Goon comic I've ever read has been fun.
Hey, you know what I just realized? We basically had the same conversation about the Punisher that we did about Rorschach. A lot of people liking him wrong.
Nope, you're not wrong about that.
So you said he was, you compared him to Popeye.
Yeah.
We do have Popeye the Sailor Man at 169 and Parker at 168, who I think are both pretty comparable characters to the Goon.
I think you're probably right. I think the Goon could go in with them pretty easily.
Right above them, we have Lightning Lass. Right below Johnny Sorrow. I think he's better than Johnny Sorrow, for sure. I kind of want to say better than Popeye, but not as good as Parker in comics.
I would be in agreement with that.
All right, so he is the new number 169, the Goon.
Next on Matt's list is Peter Venkman from the IDW Ghostbuster comics.
Ooh, that's a tough one because we have to rank him only based on the comics.
Yeah, and I haven't read enough of those comics really to know where to rank him.
I mean, I have, and they're quite good.
Yeah.
I highly recommend them if you are a Ghostbusters fan at all. And the events of the movie are in continuity with those comics because the trick of the comics is that everything's in continuity. Both movies, the role-playing game, the video game, and something else weird. The cartoon isn't in continuity, but they've used elements of it and crossed over with the cartoon.
Okay.
Venkman is pretty constant in those comics. Like, I think the character who benefits the most is Winston, because he, like, gets...
Something character, to do.
Which, yeah. He gets, like, a background and character, and, like, Eric Burnham and Dan Schoening, like, really build on the idea of him being, like, a former military man who you know, leaves the service and needs to figure out what to do with his life. Like, that a lot of that stuff happens in the comic in a really fun way. Venkman's just pretty much Venkman throughout. He's good. But... the comics are not the movie where Venkman is extremely good.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I mean, how did we handle this with Parker where there's a limited amount of comics based on another media?
I mean, we just had to go by the version of Parker that appears in the comics. I think we just had to go by the version of Venkman that appears in those particular books and not color.
Well, he's not as good as
him by other media appearances.
Okay, well, he's not as good as Michelangelo.
Yeah, I was going to go straight to the Ninja Turtles, too, to rank this.
Yeah. I don't think he's as good as KG Beast. I don't think he's as good as Booster Gold. But here's where I'm going to put him, Matt. I keep looking for characters that we would prominently know from other media. So I'm looking at, like, Storm Shadow. I'm looking at Swerve. I don't think he's as good as Shredder. Shredder Rokusaki is very good. I don't think he's as good as Garfield. Wink, wink. Get it, get it.
Yes,
get
yes.
it. But I do think he's better than Emily Aster. I don't think he's as good as Spider Jerusalem.
Okay, so between Spider Jerusalem and Emily Aster goes Peter Venkman.
Peter Venkman at number 156 or 145.
For this last one, scroll the fuck down because it's Nermal the Cat.
Now, do you really not like Nermal that much, Matt?
Yeah, he is designed to be hated. Like, he does nothing but show up and then, like, he shows up, he's overly enthusiastic and cute. And then Garfield mails him to Abu Dhabi, which makes me feel guilty.
Why does it make you feel guilty?
I don't think he deserves that. I don't think he deserves the punishment that Garfield gives him. But he is annoying. Like, there's nothing good about it. Like, the punishment he's given is not satisfying.
I think Nermal is bad. And I think Nermal is bad both because Nermal is bad and also because a cute thing must be destroyed is a weird – that's like a weird
– like all Nermal needs is to be told to chill out, right? Like that's
it. I like how you're no longer looking for this as a character standpoint. You're looking at this as like, I need to fix this problem.
I mean, that's fair.
Just chill the fuck out, Normal. Hey, Normal, can you calm down for 5 fucking minutes? God, I really want just the 5 days of strips where Matt Wilson shows up in John Arbuckle's house.
Just tells Normal to chill out.
All right, so worse than John? John's really bad.
John is bad.
John's a 279.
I will say this. I'll say this for Normal. If you go back and read like the original appearances of Normal, which are on the Garfield Wikia, he's more obnoxious in those than in later appearances where he just shows up and is cute. Like he's got more of an attitude in those early comics.
Tell me he has a rude dude.
He's got a real rude dude.
I am now up on garfield.wikia.com, and I'm just very... Do you know that Normal has a superhero version named Abnormal?
Abnormal, yeah. Normal has appeared 149 times in the comics as of 11th of October 2017, the 13th most.
That's very recently updated.
Very recently. People are keeping up the Garfield Wikia.
So we have 130 characters between Garfield and John Arbuckle.
Well, Normal is better than John, but not much. Possibly better than Access, probably better than Ten-Eyed Man or the Mime, but not better than Cluemaster.
The strip where Garfield says that he likes Normal the way he likes intestinal flu is pretty good.
Yeah, that's back when Jim Davis cared.
All right, so you said possibly better than Access, and I really want to... Could you go into your reasoning there, Matt?
I mean, Access really just really super sucks.
I think below Ten-Eyed Man.
Below
the Mime. Below Cluemaster. Yeah, I think below... Like, fucking, I'll take Normal number one over Hawk number one any day of the week.
Okay, but so between Ten-Eyed Man and Hawk... goes Normal.
And Normal enters the list at 276.
I'm wondering where Odie is going to end up when we get Odie, because we're definitely going to get fucking Odie.
Okay. Real quick, power rankings. This is how it's going to go down. Write this down for future reference. Garfield, Liz.
Okay.
Odie. That scary dude from the Halloween special, Normal, John. That's it. That's the order they're going to hit this list.
Why don't we throw in Orson and Sheldon, too? And
because fuck Orson and Sheldon.
We can't even rank the comics versions of those characters because I've never read the US Acres comic. Okay.
Fucking trash.
Look, okay, so we only got through 3 lists on this special, but we had a lot of Punisher talk to get through. So, apologies. We had to get through that Punisher talk, though. If you want to send us a panel president list, you can do that at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send every story ever lists. If you have a listener question, you can email it to us there. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. Or if you just want to drop us a line otherwise. Tell us about one of your Ajax dreams, even though we already did that episode. Send us an email. Also, send us listener questions on Tumblr. Our Tumblr is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can go check that out and send us a question there. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. And check out the panel president and every story ever lists. I'm going to try to make it my sworn duty to update the panel president list this week. Hold me to it, everybody. Also,
hold me to it, everybody.
Check us out on Apple Podcasts. If you like the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more positive reviews we get there, the more we are featured. Or if you use some other podcast app, leave us a review there. We could use them wherever you find your podcasts. Now we reach the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, it is extremely, extremely easy. All you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net, and you will find links to everything that I do. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
I would say it's easy, but not extremely easy. But you can go to the-isb.com and find links to the columns that I write at places like Looper and Geek.com and occasionally Polygon. And you can also find links to comics that I do. Come see me at those cons that I mentioned and say hi.
And right here at the end of the show, one thing we've been doing so far in 2017 is sending people to good causes, charities that we would like for people to go kick in some money to. We got this suggestion for a good cause from a listener, Katie C., who said that she just wanted to email and suggest that we look into adding GLSEN to that list. That's at glsen.org. They're a great group that's doing work to make schools better and more supportive of LGBT plus youth. I know you guys have spotlighted the Trevor Project before, which is another, also a fantastic organization, and I feel like these two go hand in hand. So go over to glsen.org, check them out, and help make schools a more inviting, safer place for kids who are LGBTQ and otherwise, because, you know, it can be tough. Bullying is tough. All that stuff is very hard for anybody, let alone somebody who might be targeted because of their sexuality or their gender identity. So go check out that organization. Thank you, Katie, for that suggestion.
Also, just a quick reminder for anybody who relies on it like I do, open enrollment for the healthcare marketplace is open now and is going to be a little shorter this year than it has been previously. So if you need to get in there and deal with that, then get in there and deal with that. Don't put it off. Get that done. But that's it. This has been War Rocket Ajax number 377. Matt, how do we do?
Well, Chris, I got some emails, some Tumblr messages, some tweets from people after last week's episode. Because, you know, we were talking to Benito from the Warped Dimension. He was coming to us from the underneath. And
right, the underneath.
And he
the wrong way around.
and he, you know, his audio was a little, you know, a little unusual, a little messed up because of where he was broadcasting from. And some people emailed me to say, "Hey, Matt, you love the show, but it wasn't HQC because of Benito's audio." And unfortunately, I'm
really curious as to what your response to that is, Matt, because I know what mine is.
My response to that was to print out those emails and throw them in a fireplace because everything we do is HQC.
Yeah.
As was this week's show. We didn't have any audio from the turned over.
That's a pie. That's a pie, Matt.
No, that's a turnover.
That's a pastry.
We didn't have insufficient for some audio, you know. So obviously this week's was HQC. If anybody was unable to listen to last week's episode because of the audio, I apologize. It was also still HQC because we are 100% HQC every single week.
Like it says on the t-shirt, HQC, always S rank.
See you next week, everybody. We love you.
Yeah!
Flash.
What do you say before we do this normally?
Oh, right. There's not like a music cue there. Hey, Matt, I'm giving you some extra work to do this weekend.